The reading this morning is from Sharon Salzberg. She's a best-selling author who has introduced thousands, perhaps millions, to enriching practices of meditation inspired by Buddhism. And the reading this morning, as well as Gretchen's sermon that follows, is an invitation to you to bright faith. And what exactly is bright faith? Let's hear the words of Sharon Salzberg. The state of love-filled delight in possibilities and eager joy at the prospect of actualizing them is known in Buddhism as bright faith. Bright faith goes beyond merely claiming that possibility for oneself to immersing oneself in it. With bright faith, we feel exalted as we are lifted out of our normal sense of insignificance, thrilled as we no longer feel lost and alone. The enthusiasm, energy, and courage we need in order to leave the safe path, to stop aligning ourselves with the familiar or the convenient, arises with bright faith. It enables us to step out, step away, and see what we can make of our lives. With bright faith, we act on our potential to transform our suffering and live in a different way. Bright faith can resemble blind faith. Both tend to be inspired by something or someone outside ourselves that can send us off on sudden journeys. Journeys around the world in pursuit of a dream. But blind faith is associated with an unthinking devotion that is mistakenly seen as the fulfillment of the journey of faith, rather than as an early step on that journey. Bright faith, on the other hand, is seen simply as a beginning. And not a beginning in which we surrender discriminating intelligence, but rather one in which we surrender cynicism and apathy. Its abundant energy propels us forward into the unknown. Here ends the reading.
Writer Elizabeth Lesser tells the story of when she traveled to Jerusalem under the guise of tourism, but in truth as a way of dealing with her messed up marriage and off-track life. So one day on her trip, she found herself drawn to a narrow, dusky shop, so she went in. In the back of the room, she found two men drinking tea at a low table. After a while with her there, the younger of the men came forward to greet her and looked at her as if, she says, trying to read the secrets of her heart. And then he said in perfect English, "Come, you will like this picture." And he took her toward a framed piece of art. At that point, the older man, too, came to greet her and placed his right hand on his heart and bowed his head in a traditional Islamic greeting. "See the rose?" he asked. Framed in dark wood, it was an image of a rosebud with shimmering pale petals holding one another in a tight embrace. Under the flower was an inscription with the words that are printed in the order of service today by Anais Nin. And the day came when the risk to remain tight in a bud was more painful than the risk it took to blossom. As Lesser read it, she says she found her eyes stinging with tears. "What's wrong?" the young man asked her. "Nothing's wrong," she said. "I'm fine." "No," he said. "You're in pain. And do you know why you're in pain?" "Because you are afraid." "Afraid of what?" she asked, wondering how he could see as if so clearly into her heart. "Afraid of yourself," the man replied. And he placed his hand on his chest and patted it. You're afraid to feel your real feelings. You're afraid to want what you really want. Just what the painting says, your heart is like the flower. Let it break open. What you want is waiting for you in your heart. The time has come. Most of us recognize this kind of moment, both the struggle that Lesser was in and the hope of following a new path, the hope of finally blossoming after holding our lives somehow tight in a bud. We get it because most of us have had it in one way or another, overcome with loss or struggle or the pain of trying to make sense of the world when it is so senseless. We go in search of a new way, and somehow that way presents itself, and we respond with yes, despite no new evidence, no change in fact of circumstances, just a new conviction, and then we follow it through. This is faith. And when life is falling apart, there's nothing more important. To be able to say, despite any proof to support such an idea, there remains another way. To be able to say, we can choose love, or that love chooses us, and love can make a difference. To hold on to that vision, that imagination, to live as if it were true, and to make it so by living that way. This is life-saving faith. Now, in the Christian framing of this story, we might call that struggling place sin. After all, sin in its fullest sense simply means to describe a state of separation. Separation from one another, from our truest self, from the source of life itself. Which, to be clear, assumes that right living comes when we are in right relationship with all three of these things: self, other, spirit of life. And so separation in any would mean living a life that is less than moral, less than ethical, less than the life that we are called to live. Now, taken this way, I think it's pretty easy, pretty clear, that sin is its own kind of punishment, just like our universalist tradition has long claimed. Now, in Lesser's story, she was separated in all of these ways, from those around her, and her husband, her children, her travel companions, her country, separated from her truest values and the spirit of life calling to her, and separated from herself. The invitation in the Israeli shop was to return to relationship with all of these, to open herself up to all of these, to live beyond fear and in love. And in that moment, something in her surrendered. She allowed herself to simply, not simply to imagine a world beyond her suffering, but to take steps to change her life. As Sharon Salzberg describes it, this feeling that allows for actualizing possibilities, this love-filled delight and eager joy, is described in the Buddhist tradition as a state of bright faith. As Salzberg says, with bright faith, we feel exalted as we are lifted out of our normal sense of insignificance, thrilled as we no longer feel lost and alone. And it is this feeling of joy that propels us forward, allows us to risk opening ourselves to a new and greater love. This is a different way, I think, of thinking about faith than many of us have been taught. Faith is so often thought of as an intellectual assent to some particular beliefs. But in this model, faith, in its earliest stages at least, is a feeling. A feeling of joy and safety, kind of like the earliest feelings of being in love. And in this state, you might recall, intellectual assent has no bearing. Right? You only know goodness, that there's goodness, there's a lot of it, and you want more of it. It should keep going, just a lot of goodness. Perhaps if you think back to your earliest days in this religious community, or maybe in another Unitarian Universalist congregation, you will remember feeling like this. I know for me, the feelings that I had back then in that first Unitarian Universalist church, they still remain pretty tangible to me. I can call them to mind very easily. See, I cried through the whole first service. Not out of sadness, but out of this sense of being at home in a new way. I had this overwhelming sense of joy and peace, but also energy. Okay, I actually cried through the first three or four services that I attended. It was like this great release or exhale. I was sort of remembering. It's like, for those of you that practice yoga, like the Shavasana. If you've ever cried through that, you know what I mean. I felt hopeful, like the world that I longed for was actually possible, and I wanted to be a part of making it so. Maybe some of our new members that we've welcomed today are feeling this same kind of abundant energy. Maybe these are the feelings that you felt that led you to say yes to the promise of membership, to say yes to partnering with this community of faith as we live as if love matters. I hope so. As we all think back on our journeys of faith, I wonder what we each would remember about those earliest feelings, what we can say about their source, and what made us receptive to those feelings. Salzburg describes that most often the source of bright faith is external, a person or a place or words or ideas, any of these that could grab hold of your heart, open you up, and change you. I know it might seem trivial, but for me, the source for me back in that first Unitarian Universalist church was the greeter at the front door. She saw my partner and I as a couple, and she welcomed us. And the next week, she remembered us, and she welcomed us again by name. Which, yes, I do hope inspires more of us to be greeters on Sunday. You never know who needs you, who needs to see you there, who needs you to remember them, and what your kindness will mean. I was receptive to those feelings of bright faith because I had been having the opposite experience in my family and in the religion of my childhood. I had been feeling lost, and I yearned to be found. Without such a yearning and a struggle, without being so heartbroken, however, I'm not sure I would have been as receptive to the experience that I had that first and then the following Sundays. I'm not sure. See, in the Christian tradition, the Christian narrative, faith comes in response to a confession of sins. Remember? Separateness. A confession of feeling separated from yourself, from others, or from God. But I wondered, what if you aren't feeling separated? Do things have to be broken apart in order for faith to matter? And I've thought about this a lot. And I've decided the answer is yes and no. Obviously still thinking about it. Yes, because ultimately faith matters only when another world is needed, right? Faith only matters when another world is needed, because faith is an act of imagination and life orientation, and you don't need imagination or living as if something were true if it's already true. If this world that you live in, the life you have right now, is already enough, you don't need to create another, right? Only when you believe that life is less than whole or less than what it could be are you compelled into partnership with the creation of this new and better world. Right? And yet, you need not be living in this state of deficiency in order for faith to take hold of your heart. Which is good news for us Unitarian Universalists. not just because one of our core assertions is that people are not inherently sinful, but inherently good, but also good news because we are so often people who live far from life's edges, with abundant resources and a profound sense of security and goodness, which is not to say that our lives cannot be a mess, right? We know that. But the power of bright faith is its capacity not only to call you into a new life, but in its love-filled experience, not a shame-filled experience, a love-filled experience, it immediately teaches you why such a life is needed. Not because the prior life was bad or because you were bad, but because life just keeps getting more possible. Beauty grows, and we need to live. We all need to live. More and more, the whole world, the future world, needs to live within the reach of love and all of its abundant gifts. It's like the moment of holding my daughter for the first time. I had no idea that life was lacking until life called me into a greater joy. And it was completely perfect from then on, and it could get no better until a couple years later it happened again with my son. Bright faith. And it's like the first time I sat with an immigrant facing deportation in the courtroom. I was there with other Unitarian Universalist clergy, and we held him and his family in prayer and in song. We were all held in prayer and in song, surrounded by both love and hope, as well as heartbreak and suffering. I felt at once this great sense of how my life was so blessed. We were all so blessed that I was okay, and yet also life itself was not. And so I was not. I've been thinking about this interim time a lot, as you can imagine. 6 months or so ago, I wondered how it all would work. Okay, still I'm kind of wondering. But at that point, I was wondering because I realized that for many of us, another world was not necessary. Right? The one we have here is just right. There is so much goodness here. There's not separation, there's wholeness and even holiness. And I have this, and yet I have this sense, and the board has this sense. We have this sense, this shared vision that there could be more. So how do we talk about this more without appealing to a narrative of deficiency? As if what we have now is not enough. How do we begin to stimulate that possibility of what life and love calls us into next? How do we energize us all to broaden our vision and believe something more is possible? Even in this hour, it's felt so clear to me that the answer is bright faith. For there is so much beauty here, and then we keep making more of it. And from these experiences, we discover both the goodness of what is, what has been, what is, and also the possibility of something more. And from this beauty and joy, we feel compelled to act. We, the Foothills Unitarian Church, as we have been, as we are yet to become, will be born again, again, again in these moments that strike us so deeply, unpredictably, grab hold of us. We will be born of our memories of these past experiences like this that fill us so fully and compelled us to tell us who we are. And we will be born of these moments and experience in this interim time. Moments of joy and love and beauty. We need more choir singing of the ways that all of life is connected. We need more stories of sharing in small groups, more building relationships with immigrant families, more learning together. We need to read more stuff together, sing more together, try new things together, not because what we have already is not enough, but because bright faith is not a one-time experience, but always being offered anew for a new age. Now, some of what we do together during this interim time will be less than joyful, sure. And that will be important information too. But also, some of it will lead us to a beauty we had never before realized was possible. And some of it will lead us to understand the ways that our lives may be blessed and okay, but life itself is not. And we, our church, this church, our church is compelled to act, to step out, step away, and see what we can make of our shared lives, to see what love is calling us to now. And still, this is just the beginning. Bright faith is just the beginning. It's good to arrive. It's good to arrive and good to feel the good feelings of surrendering cynicism and apathy, imagining all the possibility, and yet all this energy only matters when it actually leads to work. As my colleague, the Reverend Mike Moran, likes to say, spirituality is not a spectator sport. You have to dive in. Last week, I know David spoke about spiritual disciplines or spiritual practices. In this congregation, you're invited to a whole host of potential practices, a path of five things that help you move along from that bright faith towards what the Buddhists also describe as a verified faith. Come to worship regularly, not just because you like the topic or the preacher, but because you've committed to a practice to grow in faith. Connect in the community, build relationships with those around you, real relationships. Grow in spirit through the small groups or classes. There is a table in the social hall to sign up today. Serve with or beyond the congregation. There's so many opportunities and so much need. And finally, give generously of your resources in gratitude for all these blessings we have been given. These things will transform elation and energy into depth and maturity, so that our experience of faith is anything but superficial or temporary. In our community of faith, let us put love-filled delight in the center of our vision. Love-filled delight in the center of our vision. And let this joy call us forward into a day we cannot yet even imagine. And then let us dive in. Do the work together, all those disciplines and practices, because those are fun too, actually. Let's do that work together of bearing the light of love for one another and for this world, so that we might keep on sharing and growing all this beauty. May it be so.
May it be so.
And amen.
Amen.